When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Negotiators press for a long-term Israel-Hamas truce. Plus, Apple pulls the plug on its credit card partnership with Goldman Sachs. And we'll look back on the legacy of Berkshire Hathaway's Charlie Munger.
He said, buy good companies that happen to be cheap. Every once in a while, in a market panic or for whatever reason, really good companies that generate a lot of cash and have really good management are cheap. And Warren Buffett kind of changed from buying cigar butts to buying decent companies, but that were fairly valued.
It's Wednesday, November 29th. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. We begin today with an update on the truce between Israel and Hamas. After being extended by 48 hours earlier this week, the temporary ceasefire between them is now in its final day. Negotiators are now pressing for a long-term truce, though as the Journal's Middle East correspondent Jared Malson is here to explain, a further extension could prove tricky to pull off and require some hard-to-swallow concessions on both sides. Jared, take us into the diplomacy as it stands here Wednesday morning. Where are things?
Where things stand right now is that the initial truce that's in place in Gaza is set to expire tomorrow morning at 7 a.m., and the Israeli government and Hamas both are weighing a dilemma about whether to resume the fighting or whether they continue this pause in order to negotiate the release of more Israeli hostages that are held in Gaza and, for Hamas's part, more Palestinian prisoners held by Israel. This next phase of negotiations, if it continues, is expected to be much harder than the initial phase, because this deal that was in place was for the release of women and children that have been held by Hamas since the October 7th attack in exchange for women and children held in Israeli prisons. What Hamas militants have been doing is that they're holding on to Israeli soldiers and likely some military-aged Israeli men and women, some of whom may or may not be reservists in the Israeli army, that they want to trade for people held by Israel, some of them convicted on terrorism charges and others held in connection with militant groups, including Hamas. And so that's just a much harder pill to swallow politically within Israel. At the same time, you also have this dynamic where you've had these emotional scenes of Israeli hostages coming out of Gaza, reuniting with their families. And that's also creating pressure from these families and from another section of the Israeli public who want to see this negotiation continue and want to see more hostages released.
In terms of the diplomacy that's at play here, Jared, you talk about the considerations on the Israeli and Hamas sides, but you've also got Egypt and Qatar here playing the role of mediator, and American officials are also involved, with Secretary Blinken due to visit the region tomorrow. Can you tell us anything about this bigger diplomatic push and the likelihood of potentially ending this war?
Right. We're at a kind of turning point in the war where this initial ceasefire seemed unthinkable a few weeks ago, where you had both the Israeli government and the U.S. government united in saying no ceasefire, with the U.S. firmly supporting Israel's goal of totally uprooting Hamas from power. And that seems to have shifted a little bit in recent days and weeks, where you had President Biden tweeting last night that he doesn't want to see Israel continue down the path of war, doesn't want to see either Hamas or Israel continue with that. That's a shift in rhetoric. We also know that U.S. officials have been pressuring Israel behind the scenes to scale back the bombing of Gaza in the expected next phase of the war. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been very clear that they do want to continue this campaign to get rid of Hamas. And whether that happens or not, there's going to be a lot of pressure to protect civilians and potentially to implement a ceasefire.
I have been speaking to Wall Street Journal Middle East correspondent Jared Malson. Jared, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Apple is ending its credit card partnership with Goldman Sachs. We are exclusively reporting that the tech giant is exiting their entire consumer partnership, which includes a credit card as well as a savings account rolled out this year, over the next roughly 12 to 15 months, marking a swift about-face for a program that just over a year ago had been extended through 2029. It couldn't be learned whether Apple has already lined up a new credit card issuer, though Goldman had discussed the possibility of handing over the program to American Express. Synchrony Financial has also looked into taking it over. The latest news is a setback for Apple's services business, which the company has increasingly relied on amid slowing iPhone sales. And for Goldman, it's a nail in the coffin of the bank's efforts to expand into consumer lending, a retreat that began around the end of last year after the company lost billions trying to build out a full-service operation. There is a new mantra in the tech industry as it navigates how to do more with less. Microcuts. After mass layoffs late last year and early this year, Amazon, Google, Microsoft, and Meta have instead been cutting dozens or a few hundred employees at a time. The trend suggests a new era for an industry that previously grew with little restraint, with executives now keeping tight controls on costs, even as their businesses and stock prices have rebounded sharply. Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg has dubbed 2023 a year of efficiency, with Amazon and Alphabet also eliminating jobs across non-core areas, and rather than hiring new talent, they're reallocating resources to projects within AI. America's mental health crisis has driven suicides to a record high. According to a provisional tally from the National Center for Health Statistics, nearly 50,000 people lost their lives to suicide last year, with a final count likely higher. Journal Health reporter Julie Wernow says the increase is emerging as a legacy of the COVID-19 pandemic.
It upended the economy. It left a lot of people isolated and afraid. And then on top of that, a shortage of healthcare workers, an increasingly toxic illicit drug supply, and the ubiquity of firearms have really facilitated the rise in suicides, according to these mental health experts.
Some progress has been made, with suicide rates for children and young adults on the decline, and officials are also trying to widen awareness of a national suicide and crisis hotline, 988, which is available by dialing or texting. However, Julie told me that certain populations are proving harder to reach.
Men 75 and older had the highest suicide rate last year. It's double that of people 15 to 24. One of the difficulties for that age group is that they are more isolated. They're experiencing a lot of trauma from loss and sometimes loss of their own physical and mental and cognitive health, and largely do not have the same kind of access to these digital tools as younger folks.
Coming up, we'll look back on the life of investing titan Charlie Munger and consider what comes next for his and Warren Buffett's company, Berkshire Hathaway. That's after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Warren Buffett's right-hand man and longtime business partner Charlie Munger passed away last night at the age of 99. As the vice chairman of Berkshire Hathaway, Munger was instrumental to the company's success, and while he may have let Buffett get the limelight, it was Munger in private calling many of the shots. Alex Frangos is a Journal Finance editor. He joins me now to look back on Munger's legacy. Alex, first off, why is it that Buffett is the name that most people know, while Munger, to some extent, unless you're in the investment industry, kind of flew below the radar?
Partly it's Warren's the chairman. He's more loquacious. They were kind of an act, right? And Warren was the guy out in front who would say lots of words, and then Charlie would deliver the zinger in a kind of one-liner. And that was the dynamic that they developed inside the relationship. They'd really described themselves as equals. If anything, Warren described Charlie as someone who was his mentor, always telling him that he was doing things wrong. And so it was an incredible partnership. They, over 50 years, said that they never had an argument. They just had a mind meld. They were alter egos of each other.
Beyond just Munger's disposition, we should note he was quite instrumental in driving some of Buffett's biggest investment successes too, right?
They were both incredibly successful investors on their own back in the early days in the 50s and 60s and 70s. Warren Buffett's strategy early on was to buy the proverbial cigar butts. Go find crummy companies that are super, super cheap, and maybe you'll find that it's actually worth something. Charlie Munger had a slightly different take. He said, buy good companies that happen to be cheap. And every once in a while, in a market panic or for whatever reason, some industry has fallen out of favor, really good companies that generate a lot of cash and have really good management are cheap. And his philosophy was be patient and wait. And then when the opportunity comes, it's going to be a really short window and you got to pounce. And Warren Buffett kind of changed. The first example that Warren Buffett liked to use was See's Candy, which is, you know, not a huge company, but it's a good company. It wasn't a cigar butt. And Charlie, it was his push to buy that company. And then it's been a great success. And I can attest that their chocolates are, in fact, delicious. But even in his later years, and this is what's so remarkable, is someone who was, you know, in his 80s or 90s and recognized the tech boom. And he was very skeptical of it. During the internet boom, he had some very saucy words to describe some of the ridiculous companies that were at ridiculous prices. But he also knew the transformative effect. And Warren Buffett, he doesn't invest in anything that he doesn't understand. Charlie Munger was a little bit more willing to try to understand those businesses. And they made some early investments in Chinese electric battery car company, BYD. They've had big stakes in Apple. So I think it goes to the idea that Charlie Munger had a very plastic brain. He was willing to learn. He loved learning. He loved reading. He thought that you always had to be gathering information and pushing yourself to understand things that you don't understand.
All right. So Munger's legacy really can be felt in Berkshire's investment portfolio, which brings me to this company and its future. It was Buffett and Munger, after all, with their cult following, always leading the annual investor meeting. That's obviously got to change. And do we know much else about the legacy planning that is underway at Berkshire?
Yeah, well, you know, Warren Buffett is 93, and so he's still around, and I'm sure he will be leading the next meeting if he's in good health. They have designated a successor in Greg Abel, who's a executive there, who's already running huge parts of the Berkshire Hathaway empire. He's been rolled out for a number of years, and people know he's there, and he sits on the stage at those meetings, and people have gotten to know him. The inevitable question is, will he have the same magnetic draw that Buffett and Munger had as a double act? They're incredibly avuncular. They're almost like people from another era. These very old-fashioned guys speaking very folksy and lots of aphorisms and straight talking and all that. And in a world of corporate speak and gobbledygook, it's really refreshing and people are attracted to that. So will Greg Abel have the same personality and attract that kind of thing? It's totally unknown. I mean, we just don't know. And that's what makes it exciting to follow.
That was Wall Street Journal finance editor Alex Frangos. Alex, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And that is What's News for Wednesday morning. Today's show was produced by Kate Bullivant. Our supervising producer is Sandra Kilhoff. And I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. We will be back tonight with a new show. Until then, thanks for listening.